I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with P. Seth Thompson. Seth, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I want to talk about the Challenger.
Okay.
Because you mentioned the Space Shuttle Challenger in an artist statement, where you talk about what that moment or what your viewing of that moment meant to you as a kid. And you use video from that in your piece, The Last One.
Yes. So with the Challenger, it kind of started off when I was in grad school. And my first passion was film. I went to school for film to get my undergrad. And so all my work has always had to have some sort of cinematic narrative to it. So I was in grad school, I was trying to figure out at what point in my life was there a moment that kind of altered my reality, altered my perception of reality. And I came to that moment because it was so profound, not only for me, but I think for a lot of people around the world. I was 6 years old and was in first grade. And our teachers brought all the students to the cafeteria to watch the launch. And before that, being 6 years old, all you know is Sesame Street, Muppets, the things you should know in terms of mass media and television. And so when I was watching it, in my childlike mind, I just thought this was another movie, so to speak. It wasn't real. And then when it exploded, I still didn't think it was real. I didn't know what was going on, but I noticed that everyone was reacting differently. All the adults were crying or freaking out or like rushing us to our room or doing something. And at that moment, it was a weird alteration to where I guess subconsciously started thinking about how television is also part of our world. And the confusion started to arise from that because you're a kid. And so if, like, say, Krista McAuliffe, who was on the Challenger, you know, she's dead in real life. She lived in our world. She lives in the TV world. Then I started to believe that Big Bird or Kermit the Frog also existed in our world too. So there was this blurriness between reality and fiction at that point, but not really understanding how to logically make sense of it.
So how do you make sense of it now?
As an adult, and of course studying all the things that you're supposed to study in grad school and film school in terms of theory, I make sense of it from an artist standpoint as the moment where I guess you could say I became an artist, because there was that moment where the question arose in my mind of, you know, what's going on here? What's the difference between the television world and my world? And I think my whole process and my whole practice is trying to find that answer. Like, what makes me separate from these fictional characters, in a way.
That Challenger moment, going back to that for a quick second, is still such an interesting moment in our history, because as I was watching the promo piece for your show that you sort of feature it, I'm watching it, and I'm not sure if I'm telling you what I'm thinking, I'm not sure if I want to watch the full video. Like, I'm watching the space shuttle go up, and at some point, I'm not sure if I want to watch it explode. There's this sort of experience where I'm looking at it, and I know what's about to happen, but I'm not sure if I want to watch all of that. But then once it happened, I ended up rewinding it maybe like 3 or 4 times and watching just that part over and over again. And it's, I don't know what that was in me, but it's a very interesting relationship to that moment that we have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I totally get where you're coming from, because there had been a huge gap between me seeing it live at 6 and then me seeing it, you know, years and years later, and then me finally coming back to it in grad school. I almost had the same experience of watching it and having that moment where I didn't want to see it explode. And then it did explode, and it wasn't as intense or profound as I made it out to be. And I want to say one of the reasons might be because, you know, in 2014 or when 2010, when I started really focusing on my thesis show with the Challenger, you know, it's post 9/11, it's post all this other stuff that has happened. And so you look at the Challenger versus 9/11, and it seems very, I don't want to say trivial because it's not trivial, but kind of in that same vein, because 9/11 was so much more intense. So we've almost gotten to the point where we're so overloaded with all these images that it's hard for us to make ourselves watch something if it's not fiction or fictionalized.
So how do you watch TV or film? Or I would say no, more so TV when you see TV depicting events like wars or conflict or things that are not pleasant. How do you watch those things? Or I guess through what filter do you watch?
I try to always keep, especially with news events, I try to always keep a critical eye. From my education and really digging deep into film theory and media studies, it's hard for me to watch anything and believe it right off the bat, because I think about the editing, I think about the camera shot, the angle, how this lighting is making me feel something, how this edit is making me feel something. And so I almost never trust anything I see on TV anymore. So I watch it almost like a fictional film. Because anytime you put something out there in the mass media, it's been wrapped in a bow and packaged for us to consume. And I just don't want to buy into it, you know.
Now, when you're watching film, do you have an easier time watching that because you know that it's been manufactured?
Yeah, definitely. For my last show at Sandler Hudson Gallery, This Message Has No Content, I focused on the whole idea of watching film at home versus in a theater. I think, and they talk about this in film theory, the whole idea of the cinematic apparatus, where when you go to a theater, it's created to put you in a dream state. So you're in the darkness and you're looking at the screen and you don't see anyone around you. And so it's much more easier to accept the narrative in front of you. When the VCR was invented and people started watching films at home, the film entered into our domestic space, and so we're able to control it more with the remote control or watching it multiple times. And so kind of that illusion was broken because we weren't in darkness anymore and we were active participants. And so when I watch a film now, I can enter into the narrative and escape. But at the same time, I'm always overanalyzing everything that I'm seeing. So it's kind of this paradox that I have in a way when I'm watching a film or TV or any sort of fictional narrative.
At what point in film school did the theory part tend to dominate your amount of interest and passion, because I think when people consider, or at least think back to what they know about film school, there's this vision of getting knee deep into the production process and the cinematography and the locations and all of the things that can make producing a film very attractive and very sexy and very interesting.
Yeah.
So what about the theory part really spoke to you?
I think it was when I started becoming more aware of the connection between who I am and how film, between the connection of who I am and how film kind of created that for me. So when we started talking about, you know, the cinematic apparatus, as I was saying, and then started to think about why I'm so attracted to horror films and science fiction films. And then when I started studying it, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense, because of my life as growing up in the South and being in this world where it's like the 80s and the transition of the 80s and the glamour of the 80s and all these new things are happening, coming from a single parent home, even though my parents are best friends still, growing up that, and also being gay and not really realizing that as a kid, you tend to connect to these other worlds to escape this your world that you can't even be yourself. And so when I started to really understand film theory, it made sense that when you're watching, like, say, A Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th, which I'm just insanely obsessed with to the point where it really does bother me at times. I keep on thinking about the fact that the reason I'm so obsessed with them is because I am the final girl in these films. I am the one that is trying to tell people, like, something's going on, something's wrong. Not that there's a killer loose, but, like, Challenger exploded. That's really weird. There's something wrong here. There's something more to this world than there really is. And then you tell these adults, and they're not really hearing you. They're not trusting you because you're a kid, but you think you know so much more. And so you're delving into this world that doesn't really exist. Because the world that you live in isn't what you want it to be. You want it to be so much more, you know, if that makes sense.
What is that much more for you?
It's a lot of things. You know, being from the South, there's, you know, not everyone is raised in a church, but I was, and I was a Methodist. My family's, they're all Methodist. And it's not so much more on this, like, organized religion, but there's more out there than what is seen. And so that's what really drew me towards quantum physics. And just the simple idea of the observer makes the reality. And they literally say, if there's no observer present, then nothing exists. And when I started to really wrap my head around that, and I still don't really understand everything there is to know about quantum physics because I'm not a physicist, I became so attached to it because it really did answer my question. And I felt like, oh, I'm right. I'm really onto something. And so I think photography, mass media, media studies, all this stuff has, as a byproduct, has created a world that we're just surrounded by illusion. We're surrounded by all these things that we think we need, all these things that we think we have to survive, we identify with these weird things, like I said, Nightmare on Elm Street. When people think of me, they think of Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th. So they're identifying me with something that isn't really real. It's all an illusion. And so I started to correlate that with these like two-dimensional characters we see in films and how they're just kind of this archetype, like a combination of all these different characters into one. But then I started to think, well, there's something more to us than just an archetype. And so that something more means that there's something more to this world than just what we see, you know, at the micro level, if you want to say that. Whoa.
So what is your connection right now to making art in Atlanta, in this place? What is this place give you or create for you, or, you know, contextually, what is it about here that works for you right now?
Well, I think I'm only one of the two Walt Hall Fellows that are originally from Georgia, and I might be wrong about that, but I was born in East Point, just south of the airport, and I was raised in Clayton County and Henry County, just right by the airport. And so I think I connect to Atlanta on a different level, not a higher level nor lower level, just different. And so I think all my art, all the work that I create is just a byproduct of all the experiences I've had in Georgia, from hanging out at the Atlanta College of Art when my mom worked there, to renting videos at the local video store in Jonesboro, Georgia. So I don't really connect to Atlanta as an artist. And I know how that sounds, and I don't mean it to sound the way it does. I think I connect to Atlanta more as, I guess for lack of a better word, an Atlantan. You know, this is my home. This has always been my home. Everything's familiar. So I don't ever question the city or its progress or lack thereof. I just don't want to make work that situates myself in any sort of physical realm, so to speak. And I don't want to make work that really defines me as a Southern artist or a Southern gay male artist or anything that creates an archetype for me. So my connection's just, I guess, a nostalgic connection.
It's home.
It's home.
Yeah. So for those who are listening who are not from here and considering Southern hospitality and this being home, if there was a place or two places that you would love for people to go visit or that they have to experience or things that inspire you about this place, your home, mm-hmm. what are one or two of those things or places?
Well, I've always been kind of a tourist junkie. Whenever I go on trips, I just love to do the contrived tourist stuff. And so I would say one of them would be Six Flags Over Georgia, because it's almost like you're stepping back in time and you're surrounded by such a diverse group of people because everybody goes there. And it's just such a strange experience because it's, you know, of course, if anybody has gone through any sort of art school, they understand simulacra and simulation and that whole theory. And that is just bottom line what it is. You're walking into some sort of weird simulation of what Georgia or Atlanta represents. and it's all an illusion. And you get to ride rides, so that's a good thing too. I love amusement parks. That, of course, the High Museum is great. I used to work there, and it was just one of the best experiences because I, because my boss Michael Rooks just really taught me a lot, and it was just the best experience I've ever had at a job. And I guess I would say Stone Mountain for the same reason as Six Flags. It's really weird. It's really fraught with this weird history. And now it's kind of like a Dollywood because Dollywood bought it. And so now it's more of a Six Flags than it used to be. And so it's just weird. I like walking into places that you know from the get-go is just pure illusion. And then you enter into it, and then it seems like anything can be possible at that point.
Are you more comfortable in those places that are just pure illusion because you know that it's all illusion and you can either choose to dig deeper and figure out what is it covering up, or you can just enjoy the illusion for the sake of for the amount of time that you're there?
Wow, that's a good question. I've never really thought about it that way. But I think, now that I'm thinking about it, it totally makes sense that the reason I love those places is because there's this almost self-awareness or this self-reflexivity or whatever that word is, to where everyone knows you're an illusion. Everyone knows you're in a simulation. And so you don't have to act. You don't have to act a certain way. You can become a kid at Disney World. You know, you can become a kid at Six Flags. The places that I find most uncomfortable is when you go to these other places or events or whatever, and you have this feeling that there is just really no self-awareness, where you have to perform and you have to be on. And when that happens, I guess I just get really quiet and I start overanalyzing everything. And usually it's any sort of event or any sort of thing you have to dress up to do because you're performing. I mean, we live in this world where we're playing all these roles and we're constantly switching from one role to the next and performing in order to keep in order to stay relevant or in order to keep people interested in who we are. But at Disney World, you don't have to do that. You just leave it at the door and just go on Space Mountain and be a kid.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Seth, let everyone know how they can find out more about your work, your past work, which you're about to get into, all of the above.
Okay. My website's pretty simple. It's just pseththompson.com. Go on there and you can find my email, my recent work, my older work, and I am also represented at Sandler Hudson Gallery, which is over in the west side of town. A great gallery if anyone wants to go see some great art. They just had a 25th year anniversary party. So that's really amazing to be operating for 25 years. They're really good. So yeah, that's about it.
All right.
Thank you.
P. Seth Thompson. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.